Okay, let's begin with communications items, please, Carla.
1087, request of C. Johnson to address council regarding suicide and the behavioral health unit of the Portland Police Bureau statistics report.
Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Commissioners. As you know, I'm Charles Johnson. I have some materials to go on the record and to be passed out to you.
Okay.
Charles Johnson, and you could certainly say that I'm a co-director for Global Systemic Change, but it's an unpaid position. It's a little bit sad to be following Debbie as we give specific thought to loss of life among transgendered people. And unfortunately, the Behavioral Health Unit did a report talking about 200 deaths. The paperwork you have in front of you comes from an event, Northwest Pilot, that primarily addressed housing, and unfortunately it doesn't look like any city staffers were able to make that presentation at the UCC on Sunday. But when I'd signed up at the beginning of October, when we have a communication problem, I had to wait this long before to get in front of city council. We'd put aside a little bit of money as a community to the city's behavioral health unit in the police department to do some research and find out how we're failing that in a 20-some month period, over 200 of our neighbors had taken their own lives. And there's not been adequate response to that report. I've spoken with the director of Cascadia Behavioral Health. He's a suicidologist. And I was hoping that Commissioner Novick would be here because in a way, he's my favorite commissioner because he's the one person we can point to as having taken the most concrete action to prevent deaths in this city. And I'll be engaging with your staffs to help facilitate the process of a more active approach to suicide prevention. And I look forward to some discussions where concrete numbers will come in the terms of budget as to how we're going to back that up, because we're creating an unfortunate situation. Last week, we were here, and the city decided, based on promises, verbal political promises made in 2007, that the city had to forego about $800,000 in revenue that could have been used for suicide prevention studies. Arguably, there's good economic impacts, and it's always important for you to live up to your word. So when you say you're going to give people tax credits on $100,000, you probably ought to do it. But my guess is if I did get time with a budget specialist, we could probably find very little money in the city budget that's specifically earmarked to the task of suicide prevention and intergovernmental cooperation on that. So with that, I will end my discussion about the most important topic that will be in front of City Council, and we can move on to make sure you do the right thing about the Water Bureau.
All right.
Mr. Johnson, I'll be bringing a report to Council on the success of the contract that we have with Lines for Life, creating the new number and the evidence they have in terms of successes. Obviously, there's more work to be done, and I appreciate your advocacy. That report will either be in December or January.
Thanks, because there are other good people we're going to look working to partner you. Cameron and I were at PSU yesterday with Social Justice Fund Northwest, and thank you for your work, all.
Yeah, and I was happened to be watching the police bureau's training for suicidal situations last Friday, and I think they're continuing to improve their ability to respond thoughtfully and appropriately as police officers. But that's the end of the chain. That's when the person is already at a point of desperation. You know, they were successful in 10 hours of discussion of talking somebody off the St. John's Bridge a couple weeks ago. That's great, but you're talking about farther upstream, and I think that's where the attention needs to go as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for that comment, Mayor. And, yes, I think that's one thing that is perhaps missing from the budgeting and departmental accountability process is that obviously we need to do the work of those crisis situation responses, but we also need to say, well, if we're spending, you know, $900,000 in man hours and time, then we need to make sure that there's a budget to reduce the number of those situations so those dollars can be spent not at crisis time.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you all
very much. Okay, thanks, John. So I think the next two people want to come up together, 1088, 1089.
1088, request of Marcy Hule to address council regarding petition to uphold the goals of Forest Park Natural Resources Management Plan. And 1089, request of Catherine Thompson to address council regarding petition to uphold the goals of Forest Park Natural Resources Management Plan.
Come on up. Good morning.
Morning. So we're here today to present a petition to City Council and Parks Department. And I'm Catherine Thompson, Dr. Catherine Thompson. I'm a pediatrician and a member of the Portland County Pediatrics.
I'm Marcy Houle.
And over the past year, Marcy and I have communicated with you as individual citizens about our concerns about the welfare of the park and safety of pedestrians in the park. And I've shared my own story with some of you. My husband and I were actually walking on Maple Trail, and a cyclist came around the corner, you know, cycling illegally, and skidded out of control. And we jumped out of the way, and when he did stop, he said, "I didn't hit you." And then he said, "I'm riding here as an act of civil disobedience." And I was quite incredulous. So today we would like to offer this petition because I'm not alone in this, and we have collected signatures, and we've collected some stories about other people that really exhibits that my experience isn't unique. So the petition asks city government to do two things. One is to uphold the goals of the Forest Park Natural Resources Management Plan, and two, 92% of park users are pedestrians, and bicycles are illegally taking over pedestrian-only trails in Forest Park, causing safety hazards and damaging the trails. Portland Parks and Recreation resources must be prioritized to address this threat to user safety. Laws governing bicycles in Forest Park must be enforced, and no new trails should be considered until effective enforcement is in place. Activities that threaten user safety or harm the health of the park must be prohibited. And so we've collected hundreds of signatures, and we'd like to tell you some of the stories that came as comments in our online petition.
Nancy wrote, "One winter day I was walking a puppy on the Cumberland Trail. The puppy was on a 5-foot leash. We were almost at a corner going uphill and could not see the trail in front of us when suddenly around the corner coming down the hill was a bicyclist. He was going fast and could not stop in the mud. I went to one side of the trail and the puppy, terrified, went to the other side. He went between us. I fortunately had the sense to drop the leash and the bicyclist rode over it. It was really frightening. We could have been badly hurt."
Sarah M. said, "I've nearly been knocked down a couple of times by bikes coming fast downhill with short lines of sight. Very dangerous to all."
George wrote, "I use the trails of Forest Park as a blind person with a guide dog, and I cannot jump out of the way when a cyclist approaches at any speed. Most riders do not observe common courtesy by staying completely off the trails that are dedicated for pedestrians. There is no enforcement or follow-through on the laws. Mountain bikers should think about the fact that they frequently intimidate every other user of Forest Park."
Karen said, "I'm saddened to see not only trails on the outer edges of Forest Park degraded by bicycles, but the intersections of Wildwood Trail. Many of the cyclists are riding during the late afternoon, early morning, and evening hours. I witnessed all three on the McClay side of Wildwood. In addition, riders speed down Holman Lane, which is posted as an uphill-only trail."
Carmel wrote, "I have lived in this neighborhood and walked Forest Park for 40 years. I've had many frightening encounters with bicyclists on speeding around on blind corners on Wildwood Trail. I'm able to jump out of the way. I doubt that families with young children would be so lucky."
And Joan B. said, "I live at the start of Wildwood Trail. My husband and I are well into our 70s and walk almost daily alone or with our grandchildren. On occasion, a biker has come along and almost run us off the trail. It is scary and dangerous. Please don't let bikers take over these trails."
Now I want to direct your attention to the 2012 Forest Park Recreation Survey that was done by Portland Parks and Recreation and in conjunction with Portland State University. The purpose of this survey was to better understand preferences, motivations, and frequency of use of people coming to Forest Park. The results are telling, and they give us a sharp picture of use. 92% of all users in Forest Park are pedestrians. And how many people are we talking about come to Forest Park each year? Well, the study looked at that, too. It determined nearly 500,000 visitors come to Forest Park, 475,000 to be exact, which means 357,000 walkers want safety on the trails. And this number is only projected to grow. Another study conducted by Portland Parks and one by Oregon State Parks concluded walking for pleasure is Portland's most popular recreation activities. And these studies and statistics underscore the importance that pedestrians need to be safe when they use Forest Park.
So what can be done? Well, we want to thank you, Mayor Hales, for your stewardship of the Forest Park Natural Resources Management Plan, which is state law, because the recommendations of what needs to be done are right there. One is to formulate strong and clear ordinances that reflect the laws governing pedestrian-only trails. Two, to erect universal signage. And three, to provide effective enforcement. Give the rangers the capacity to issue citations to illegal cyclists, just as they can for those who have dogs off leash. There's also a recommendation to do collaborative efforts with the Portland Police to stop this illegal behavior. And four, erect barriers or stiles to deter cyclists from entering pedestrian-only trails. And we want to thank you again, Mayor Hales, and also Mike Abate for endorsing and promoting the Greater Forest Park Conservation Initiative that sets the vision for preservation and expansion of the park for the 21st century. In order for this treasure to be of value to citizens, we need to be able to use the park safely.
And the Forest Management Plan, Forest Park Management Plan is clear. Users not only need to be safe, they need to feel safe. And right now, as you've heard from these testimonies, they are not safe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your advocacy. And you have a number of present and past Parks Commissioners here, and Forest Park is a treasure. So we appreciate your advocacy for the park in general and for the issue of these conflicts in particular. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay, we have two more that also want to come up together, I believe.
1090, request of Jane Peterson to address council regarding Water Bureau's sale of the Freeman Street facility. And 1091, request of Carol McCarthy to address council regarding cancel the sale of the Freeman Water Tower.
Come on up. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Mayor, commissioners, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. My name is Jane Peterson, and I've noticed that those who call others NIMBYs aren't the ones affected. The Freeman tank is actually my backyard. I am about 10 feet. It's about 10 feet from my studio windows. The parcel wraps around two sides of my property that I've owned for the last 30 years. And for me, this is not an abstraction. I was told by the developer who sold me my land that this public property would never be sold without full public notice. Should this sale go through, my passive solar, efficient little home will look out onto walls. During the tank demolition and housing construction, work in my studio office will be brought to a halt by the noise next door. So I guess that's my bad luck. In 2001, however, a development just below this parcel was stopped because this land is in a riparian zone, has poor draining soil, and steep landslide-prone slopes. Despite three drain fields on our property, there is standing water on this land in the winter. What will happen when additional houses are built here? There are multiple stakeholders involved, not just me. There are ratepayers who lost out when this land was not, as an independent analysis of comparable sales indicates, sold on the open market for the best price, terms, and conditions, per City Council Ordinance 183952. Taxpayers, who possibly were deprived of parkland when other bureaus were offered this property at market value instead of book value, as per City Code 2112330. Citizens of three neighborhoods, who long wished to connect parks and trails neighborhoods to the village business district. Neighbors who expressed interest in purchasing the land over the years and were deprived of that opportunity due to the lack of public notice. And, of course, wildlife. As ratepayers, taxpayers, neighbors, and members of the public, we feel damaged by the lack of transparency and public notice and by the apparent disregard of state statute, city code, and council ordinance in the way this sale was conducted. To quote then Mill Pond Neighborhood Association Chair Rosemary Opp, who wrote in 2010, 2 years before this transaction, in response to Council Ordinances 906 and 962S that declared these properties surplus. These lands are public lands, and as such require a much broader outreach, in-depth consideration, and strict guidelines that must be adhered to when disposing of them. Here we are in 2013, with promises to do it right the next time. Commissioners, Mr. Mayor, as Rosemary's letter shows, the sale of the Freeman facility is the next time. Please stop the sale. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Carol McCarthy, and I'm here to urge you to stop the sale of the Freeman water tank property in Multnomah Village. I would like to show you a short video so you can see the property's appeal for yourselves. And you'll hear why neighbors think this public land should remain public.
I think a lot of people see our signs and hear us talk and might think that we're just talking about a water tank tower area. And when you walk past on the street, it doesn't look like much, but you can't see everything that's behind it.
This is a natural causeway for animals.
And it's behind it, which has all the wildlife and nature that we'd love people to be able to see in person. Owls who live in the trees, there's woodpeckers, there's all kinds of wildlife.
We've got to save what we've got, and this is almost an acre of lovely nature.
That's what makes this property so important.
It's a beautiful place. The Freeman Water Tank property abuts open space that was added to Woods Memorial Park in 2000. The open space is shown in the green in the first map of my handout. It was purchased jointly by Metro and Parks for its high ecological value. The Freeman Water Tank property has the same ecological value, and it's a natural extension to the current open space. The Freeman Water Tank property is highly valued by three neighborhood associations and other community groups. The second map in my handout shows that since the property borders the number 7 trail, it is the last remaining link to connect the Ash Creek neighborhood via Woods Park to the businesses in Multnomah Village. This plan is consistent with Park's 2020 vision for neighborhood connectivity. As the densities in our neighborhoods increase, so does the value of public green space and promoting the livability that makes Portland such an attractive place to live, work, and play. It appears this property was originally purchased by the taxpayers, not the ratepayers, and by our estimates, it could have been offered to the other businesses at book value of under $20. This property never should have been listed on the ordinance. The ordinance instructed the Water Bureau to sell the property on the open market for the best price, terms, and conditions in accordance with city code. An analysis of comparable sales shows that the sales price was substantially below market value. The Craigslist ad did not meet notification requirements for selling property on the open market. The sales transaction was not in the ratepayer's best interest. This property has been held for only $1,000 escrow for over a year at a time when property values are rising. This does not constitute best terms and conditions. The neighborhood associations were not notified as required by city code, so the sales agreement was not entered into an agreement in accordance to city code. If the ordinance qualifies as the Oregon Statute 221.727 alternative procedure for selling municipal real property, then these tank properties constitute a class and must be sold under a single procedure. The commissioner in charge of the Water Bureau has acknowledged there were problems with this procedure, so the changes that improve public involvement must be extended to the Freeman Water Tower as well. I urge you to stop this sale and consult the Multnomah, Crestwood, and Ash Creek Neighborhood Associations, as well as the Friends of Woods Park, to plan for its future consistent with its value as habitat, open space, and its role in promoting connectivity and livability. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. You've obviously put a lot of thought into this material for us, and that will be very helpful for us. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.